Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Affirmative Action and Equal Protection Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 23, 2016, the Supreme Court decided Fisher v. University of Texas at Austin. This is the second time the case has come before the High Court. Abigail Fisher, a white female, applied for admission to the University of Texas at Austin, but was denied. Fisher sued the university and argued that the use of race as a consideration in the admissions process violated the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. The district court held that the university's admissions process was constitutional, and the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit affirmed. The case went to the Supreme Court, which held that the appellate court erred in how it applied the strict scrutiny standard, improperly deferring to the university's good faith in its use of racial classifications. On remand, the Fifth Circuit again ruled in favor of the university, deeming its use of race in the admissions process narrowly tailored to a legitimate interest in achieving the rich diversity that contributes to its academic mission. On a second trip to the Supreme Court, the question was whether the Fifth Circuit's re-endorsement of the university's use of racial preferences could be sustained under the Equal Protection Clause. By a vote of 4-3, the Supreme Court affirmed the judgment of the Fifth Circuit. Justice Kennedy delivered the opinion of the court, which held that the race-conscious admissions program in use at the time of Fisher's application was narrowly tailored and lawful under the Equal Protection Clause. Justice Kennedy's majority opinion was joined by Justices Ginsburg, Breyer, and Sotomayor. Justice Thomas filed a dissenting opinion. Justice Alito also filed a dissenting opinion, in which Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Thomas joined. Justice Kagan took no part in the consideration or decision of this case. To discuss the case, we have Roger B. Clegg, who is President and General Counsel of the Center for Equal Opportunity. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Clegg.
I'll just give a little bit of background about the case and also some commentary on, you know, what I think the case, you know, needless to say, those of us who oppose racial preferences are disappointed, but I'm going to talk a little bit about why there may be some silver linings today. Basically, this is the case's second trip to the Supreme Court. It was up there actually almost exactly three years ago, but at that time the court, in a decision also written by Justice Kennedy, sent the case back down, where it on remand was reheard by the Fifth Circuit. The Fifth Circuit supposedly, you know, was supposed to apply Justice Kennedy's opinion in Fisher 1, which said that strict scrutiny means strict scrutiny, that too much deference had been given by the Fifth Circuit to the University of Texas in evaluating whether there really was a need for it to use racial preferences. The Fifth Circuit, however, again said that no, they think the University of Texas was right, and the case came back to the Supreme Court. It was argued in December, so it took the court a while to issue this decision. Interestingly, these higher education decisions that the court has had always come at the end of June. Bakke, Grutter, Gratz, Fisher 1, and Fisher 2 all came, you know, were all June 20-something decisions. The vote this time was 4-3. Justice Scalia, of course, in the time between the argument and the decision, died, and Justice Kagan had recused herself from the case. So I think a lot of people were expecting that Justice Kennedy would write a 4-3 decision against the University of Texas, but he surprised a lot of people by writing an opinion that affirmed the University of Texas's use of racial and ethnic preferences in admissions. He was joined by Justices Breyer, Ginsburg, and Sotomayor. None of the liberal justices wrote separately. None of them wrote concurrences that swept more broadly or anything like that. There were two dissents. Justice Thomas wrote a very short, less than one-page dissent. He also joined Justice Alito. Justice Thomas said in his dissent that, you know, he categorically, you know, would reject the use of racial preferences. Justice Alito's dissent was quite lengthy, and he read it from the bench, which is typically done when the justices really want to make a statement. And one of the news accounts, one of the news accounts said that it was an impassioned dissent. It's 51 pages long. The decision, as I say, it affirms the Fifth Circuit's decision. So this is the end of the case. There's no remand. There's nothing more to be said. Abigail Fisher, has lost. However, as I'll discuss, I don't think that this means that universities now have a blank check to use racial preferences. Justice Kennedy stressed in a couple of ways that the University of Texas's program is, quote, sui generis, end quote. He said that the way the case was litigated, quote, may limit its value for prospective guidance, end quote. A big reason for this is the fact that the backdrop of the University of Texas's use of racial preferences was the top 10% plan that it used, and Justice Kennedy stressed that plan was not challenged in this litigation. And in fact, it's rather surprising. I think that Justice Kennedy seems to suggest that maybe it would have been a good idea had the plaintiff challenged the top 10% plan, but it didn't, or she didn't. And so Justice Kennedy goes on to stress that the use of race by the University of Texas was quite limited, according to him, that there's an ongoing duty for schools that use racial preferences to continually reevaluate whether they really have to use race in order to achieve the educational benefits of diversity. Justice Kennedy stressed that, as I said, the use of race by the University of Texas is only a factor of a factor of a factor, that it was always considered contextually, that didn't automatically help anybody because of their being African-American or Latino, and that in theory, the racial considerations could, in a particular instance, might even help a white or an Asian-American applicant. Now, my own view is to agree with Justice Alito that that's actually not a fair statement of what the University of Texas was doing, but, of course, that's not really what matters so much for future litigants. Other schools are now obliged to jump through the hoops that the court says that the University of Texas jumped through, whether, in fact, they actually did or not. So that means that schools are going to have to limit their use of racial preferences in the same way the University of Texas did. They'll need to do a careful study at the outset to document why using racial preferences is essential. They have to articulate concrete and precise goals, all of these other things that supposedly did and that Justice Kennedy found that they did do. What this means is that it's still quite possible to bring challenges to programs that use racial and ethnic preferences, and I expect that those challenges will continue to be brought. And indeed, there are two cases that are already out there, one against Harvard and one against the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Those lawsuits are similar in their origins to the University of Texas. Both are being litigated by essentially the same lawyers, or some of the same lawyers at least, as the Texas case was brought. Both are cases that were sort of initiated by the Project for Fair Representation, which is Edward Blum's organization. They're somewhat different in that the focus there is more on discrimination against Asian American applicants, particularly the Harvard case, although, as I recall, that's also true of the Chapel Hill case. Those cases had been brought, were basically put on hold or on semi-hold while the Supreme Court decided the Fisher case, but now that the Fisher case has been decided, I expect that litigation to go forward. There have also been administrative complaints filed by some Asian American applicants against some Ivy League schools, Brown and Dartmouth and Yale, I believe. Those administrative complaints will have to go forward as well. So the the struggle continues. Certainly, the case law is not improved by a really solid decision by the conservatives that we had hoped for today. But realistically, I think that the proponents of racial preferences would not have folded their tents no matter what the Supreme Court had said today, and there would have had to have been additional litigation anyway on essentially a school-by-school basis to a great extent, and so that litigation will continue.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.